President of the United States. Who is this? Is it you again?
Look behind you.
This is my private line. How did you get through?
They're everywhere. All the time. We see them every day. But you have to look behind you.
There is nothing behind me. How did you get this number?
The spaceman told me.
What spaceman?
It doesn't matter. They're telling you about monsters. Please, you must look behind you.
Young lady, there are no monsters in the Oval Office.
The loudspeaker spoke up and said, The loudspeaker spoke up and said, The loudspeaker spoke up and said,
I'm Clyde Lewis, and this is Ground Zero. The numbers to call tonight, 888-673-3700. That's 888-673-3700. Today I have to tell you the truth about tonight's show. As I was writing and thinking of things to talk about tonight on this program and the things I've been reading since last night, I was up until 3 in the morning actually doing research on this program. And it scared me. That's one of the reasons why I remained awake until like 3 in the morning, because the research I was stumbling upon gave me the creeps. And I don't normally get all creeped out about Planet X, but this time I did. I scared myself a little bit. Because usually, you know, Planet X is one of those things where people tell you, oh, Planet X is coming, Planet X is coming, Planet X is coming. And I keep hearing it and hearing it and hearing it. I've been hearing about Planet X ever since I started some 20 years ago. People telling me that Planet X is coming. However, I haven't seen Planet X, nor am I anywhere, you know, close to thinking that Planet X is coming. But last night, I now am thinking that perhaps Planet X has a bigger, I guess, place in the equation, a bigger place in the eschaton than I realized. You know, there have been many occasions where I've declared on the show that I am a Fortean. Fortean. F-O-R-T-E-A-N. Fortean. I've said that. I'm a Fortean. Now, when I say this, usually there are a few people out there that, without understanding what a Fortean is, believe that it's some new religion that they've never heard of and tell me I need to find Jesus and that being a follower of Charles Ford is a sin. Well, I can safely tell you that being a Fortean is probably about as harmless as being a Trekkie or an avid fan of the X-Files. See, Charles Ford, he lived some, I don't know, you know, 100-some-odd years ago. He was widely known as the chronicler of what are now called Fortiana, which are bizarre anomalies and mysteries that change the current perception of reality, whether it be religious or scientific or anything else. And this puts me in that neutral position about anomalous topics and the strangeness of what life is, the miracle of what we witness every day, no matter how bizarre or frightening it may be. Now, I know that most people fear what they don't understand. And so it's understandable that people, when I tell them I'm a Fortean, believe that some sort of religious cults, and they tell me I need to find Jesus, when in reality, no. I never lost Jesus. I never lost God. And I know there are plenty of people out there that think I do not know my Bible and think that I do not know anything about religion, when, of course, one of my basic studies was religious history and religion. I've read the Bible. Yes, I have. I've read the Bible 3 times, twice in Spanish. And so it becomes something that you need to do and prepare for when you are in religious study. The Bible is a very important book. In order to overcome fears and prejudices, I would say that it is important to embrace those things that you are afraid of, those things you fear. You need to learn about them, and then it will become less of a source of your anxieties, less of a source of those things that get on your nerves, that bother you, that keep you up at night, that keep the light on, the night light on, keep the boogeyman from coming out of the closet and attacking you. You know, there are some people that are trapped in the illusions. They don't realize much of what they think is truth, and that truth changes, though. Truth is fleeting. It's not always exact. It's not. I've never seen it as being exact. Some people say, I have the truth, and then I say, well, that truth doesn't seem to add up here. And so I figure that as a Fortean, you can say, like Charles Fort says, well, you know, the truth is, well, it's kind of like a hat or a T-shirt. It's whatever the fad is sometimes, and truth changes over time. And he points out, well, Louis Pasteur, before he found out that homogenizing things and preparing foods properly would keep people from getting sick, there are people who used to think that demons would land on a piece of bread or on something that was sitting out and gave people sickness. So that changes. The truth about demons attacking food is it's not in anymore. We have now knowledge. We've learned through science. But see, you know, when you find out that what you've believed for a long time isn't exactly what it appears to be, or that's not true, what happens is it shocks you. It's a blow to your cognitive resonance. Millions are convinced merely on the words of others. And many people know, or at least have faith in, invisible creatures such as gods, messiahs, virgin mothers, angels, devils. All of these beings are directing life behind the scenes. Illuminati, maybe. Who knows? But of course, there's now the prevailing philosophy that even extraterrestrials have guided us anciently, and that there are ancient scrolls and tablets that indicate that they will return again. Their return, though, you know, as much as we like to think that an alien landing and disclosure would be something cool, it's just their return may not be as easy as we might think. In fact, the appearance or even the arrival of these ancient beings, or what we call the ancient gods, or these intelligent beings, could mean doomsday for some of us. And so the very idea of this has been blueprinted and laid out in the various mythologies that speak of eschaton or the apocalypse. Eschaton, apocalypse, interchangeable. Some people say, what's that word, Clyde? Eschaton. It means the end of the world, or fascination, or at least interest in the end. The eschaton, the end. The apocalypse, the unraveling, the revealing of all truths in the end. The apocalypse stories tell us that only the good survive. Only the good survive the end, that the gods play favorites in the game. However, it may become prudent to understand that throughout history, it's not been a matter of good and bad that guarantees life and endurance. It's been a matter of survival of the fittest. Our various evils over time have been adjusted to fit the epoch. And so we see that without a moral compass, the amorality of humankind will once again place it in a place of survival and endurance. We become more like beasts than like man, and so it's important that morality survives even in the worst of circumstances. You know, we've been told by various people are called authorities, that we should not question them who literally enslave us, and that their rules, established religions, politics, and science are the sources of received wisdom. Remember received wisdom, how those who question the received wisdom are most likely to be radicalized, most likely to freak out? Well, when the truly bizarre, those things that are just, you know, out of the ordinary, weird, paranormal, and unexplainable, when they occur, we see the upheaval of all of our established paradigms, and our reality is challenged. This is why I say I'm 14. This is why I have an interest in those weird stories of Fortiana. It has nothing to do with my religious beliefs. It has everything to do with thinking that anything can happen. Anything is possible. See, around my household, it seems that the television stays on the History Channel. And of course, one of the more popular programs is Ancient Aliens. And for some people, even entertaining the thought of reading ancient tablets or exploring ancient ruins and attributing the histories to civilizations or in contact with alien beings, well, that's a form of cosmic blasphemy for some people. How dare you believe that our ancestors and those who came before us were aliens? God created the heaven and the earth, not an alien. I don't think we're saying that no God had any type of hold or at least claim or copyright on the planet, but we believe that in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. The earth was a form and void and darkness moved around along the waters. God said, let there be light. There was light. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God. The Word was God, the frequency. And by just speaking alone, said, do the work, bring to pass the paradise, and let's put man in that paradise. Man, woman, let's put him in that paradise. Let's put woman in that paradise. Let's make woman from the rib of Adam, a cloning procedure that may or may not appear to be a scientific marvel, but God can do anything. God can work wonders. God can create a garden. God can banish man and woman from paradise. And that's all because something or someone wants to interfere. Thus, we bring in the serpent. We bring in the bloodline, the profanity of it all, the idea of mixing the blood of the serpent, the blood of mankind. And then we bring down something from heaven in Genesis 6. The men of renown, the strong titans having sex with the womankind. And then they become the fallen angels. They become and the phylum, and the rest is history. Or is it? There's more to this, isn't it? Well, we'll talk more about that coming up on Ground Zero. 888-673-3700. That's 888-673-3700. We're back with more Ground Zero. Don't go away.
More with Clyde Lewis and Ground Zero on FM News 101.
Lewis, and you are listening to Ground Zero. Tonight, as I said earlier, being a 14, you stumble upon all kinds of crazy stories and ideas, but then when you dig deeper, you find that maybe some of these crazy stories and ideas have an element of truth or an element of evidence that may prove or show that something weird is coming our way. As I said earlier, the Ancient Aliens program is on our TV like almost all the time. There's a marathon. We actually have it on. Everybody in the house just wants to watch Ancient Aliens. They just have a new season starting, and it's huge. And the thing is that it's very fascinating. See, back when I was a kid, it was Eric Von Daniken and Zechariah Sitchin that were pushing this ancient astronaut theory. And they speculate that alien visitors have been influencing human life for thousands, if not millions of years, even to the point of manipulating us genetically. Now, Eric Von Daniken was one of the first contemporaries to put forth the ancient astronaut theory. And when I was younger, I stood in line at a movie theater, Plaza Theater in Kearns, Utah. That's where I grew up. Little theater had a drive-in size screen right in the theater. I stood in line, got up early with my friend Craig Loveless. We went to that theater because we wanted to see the movie Chariots of the Gods. What had me glued to the subject matter was the presentation of what appeared to be the solid theories about ancient aliens and that their return would happen in my lifetime. That was back in the 1970s. I'm thinking, am I going to live that long to see this happen? I remember somewhere along my journey into this theory that Von Daniken was actually ridiculed, vilified for his observations. However, Zechariah Sitchin's apparent scholastic training gave him the credibility necessary to convince a portion of the world that his theories, including the stories of the Anunnaki and the return of Planet X and Nibiru, were good and solid and firm. And a lot of people to this day have read the books of Zechariah Sitchin and have learned about Planet X, Nibiru. Even Star Trek, the last installment of the new Star Trek, had both Kirk, Spock, and every, was it, Kirk and one other guy. I think it was either Dr. McCoy or someone else who was on the planet Nibiru. And they were being chased by this race of beings that had white skin and black eyes, and they had to thwart the eruption of a volcano to keep the planet intact. But see, we're seeing this, you know, go into pop culture. In fact, Liam was watching, little Liam, Janine's son, was watching Scooby-Doo. And of course, on Scooby-Doo, they also talk about Nibiru. They talk about Planet X, and you're hearing Scooby, Planet X, I couldn't believe I was hearing Scooby-Doo going, Planet X, really scary. And so I'm laughing because it's true. Is it, you know, so I would say to myself, okay, so Planet X is a fascinating topic. It really is a fascinating topic. But many people, I remember the first guy I had on my show talking about this was Jason Martell. And he's been on Ancient Aliens a lot. He's a guy that's on, but, you know, I don't know if he's commenting about Planet X anymore. I don't even think he has the same theories he did about Planet X anymore. But I've had him on to talk about Planet X many times. But I've never really gotten to the point where, you know, it's like every time I scratch the surface of Planet X, I feel like, it's just another Planet X show. This time, though, I'm not going to scrape the surface. I'm not going to, I'm diving deep. And that's why I'm frightened a little bit about what I'm about to tell you tonight. Because, look, if you read translations and concordances and different, I guess, interpretations of the Bible, the King James Bible, as I said before, one God created the heavens and the earth. And how a plural group of beings, and this is in observations and biblical scholars and those who have been able to think in, outside the margins of the Bible. We're not talking the, I guess, the word black and white strict. We're talking about how, you know, let us go down and make man in our image after our likeness. And people say, well, that's him and Jesus and what? Yeah, okay. But there are others that say it's a plural group of beings serving alongside God, the angels and the servants and the hosts and Jesus Christ and whomever else might be involved here. And they served alongside God. But see, this God, as most people know him as Jehovah, was not named in the Hebrew tradition of the Bible, Hebrew tradition of the Old Testament. Moses is told the sacred name or the tetragrammaton, or the YHWH, had not been revealed even to Abraham. However, he was one God who was, who is, and who shall ever be. Throughout the Old Testament, a word is used by Solomon to remark about the abode of God called the Olamim, or sanctuary, the place in heaven that is everlasting where God dwells. Sadly, most interpretations of the scripture say that the Olam is a tent. Others say it's a tabernacle, or a most high sanctuary of God. Some believe that it was a word for something we all know, or we all now call a system in heaven or solar system. It's a place of the most high in heaven, the place or planet that God and his servants live. This is known as the heavens of heaven, the realm beyond our solar system. And no less than 11 times do we see in the Bible that we have the word kingdom or olam. And olam expands to many worlds, as is said in the scripture. In my Father's house are many mansions in John 14:2. Some even say that the Olamim or the Olam is the equivalent of the Mesopotamian winged planet Nibiru, Planet X. Sumerian literature speaks of the winged planet Nibiru or Olam or everlasting tabernacle of the gods. And this is where it gets really deep. The celestial planetary gods Nibiru dwell on this winged planet, and they are, according to the histories, as the first and the last, or the Primumaton. Tonight on Ground Zero, we discuss the Primumaton, Planet X, Planet Nibiru, and the dark, deep history that we need to figure out and talk about, because there may be a return, at least a promised return of Planet X. 888-673-3700. That's 888-673-3700. And some people believe that Planet X will be the wrecking ball in the apocalypse. We'll be back with more. Keep it here on Ground Zero.
With Clyde Lewis and Ground Zero on FM News 101.
Begin, Is a planet listed in the writings of Zachariah Sitchin? According to Sitchin's interpretation of Babylonian religious texts, a giant planet called Nibiru passes by Earth every 3,600 years and allows its sentient inhabitants to interact with humanity.
If you're sitting up there in your silly little spaceship, just remember who's standing in your way.
Can you hear all these people who lived in terror of you and your judgment? All these people whose ancestors devoted themselves, sacrificed themselves to you. Can you hear them singing? Oh, you like to think you're a god. You're not a god. Come on, then.
I saw the birth of the universe, and I watched as time ran out, moment by moment, until nothing remained. No time, no space, just me. I walked in universes where the laws of physics were devised by the mind of a madman. And I have watched universes freeze and creations burn. I have seen things you wouldn't believe. I have lost things you will never understand. And I know things, secrets that must never be told, knowledge that must never be spoken. So come on!
Lewis, and you are listening to Ground Zero. Tonight, we dig beneath the surface to tell you more about Nibiru, Planet X, the history, the ancient writings, the interpretations of what might be the return of a planet where the gods live. Digging deep within the studies that I had last night kept me up until about 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. I was tired when I got into bed, but so excited to explore more. You see, King Solomon in the Bible, you look at throughout the Old Testament, a word that was used by Solomon to remark about the abode of God, the place God lived. It was called the Olamim. It was a sanctuary. It was a place in heaven that is called heaven everlasting, the heavens of heavens, the Holy of Holies. And of course, many people say, well, Olam or Olamim means tents or many tents or a village of tents or and I'm saying yes, but, you know, in the text in which it was delivered, according to what the Hebrews say, and this is what I've learned, that Olam and Olamim, the word, is heavens of heaven, a realm beyond our solar system, a place where God dwells. No less than 11 times do we see in the Bible that God's home or kingdom is an Olam. An Olam expands to many worlds. It is said in the scripture, many mansions. In my father's house, my father's Olam, are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you, I go to prepare a place for you. Some even say that the Olamim or the Olam is actually the equivalent of what the Sumerians called the winged planet or planet Nibiru, the one that they call Planet X. According to what I've been reading and what I see here, the winged planet Nibiru or Olam, known as the everlasting tabernacle of the gods, the celestial planetary gods that were called the Nibiru dwell on this winged planet, and they are, according to the histories, the first and the last, the Primumaton. Now, the Primumaton are known as the first and the last. They are the angels. They are the guardians, the servants of God, the Anunnaki, Elohim, man, the nations of man, and those who know the secrets, the prophets, are usually part of this. They are carrying out a universal and everlasting plan. God leads their various missions, and the return of the Olam of God has been foretold, and this is part of the 19th century theories that actually precede the theories of Sitchin. The idea of Planet X, Nibiru, or the everlasting tabernacle of God has been preserved and recorded, the celestial mythos, on nearly 300,000 tablets. Throughout time, there's been a story in many pantheons where gods like Apollo, Osiris, Horus, Krishna, Hercules, Jesus, and Quetzalcoatl all come from an area that is located beyond the sun or far from some unknown Olamim that is not of this world. And Jesus said unto them, ye are from beneath, I am from above. Ye are of this world. I am not of this world. John 8:23. Now, while the Olamim is the Hebrew translation for the star system or the tabernacle or the area in heaven where God dwells, there is similar cosmic mythology that is found in Mormonism. Now, let me just share with you what I know about this. And most Mormons don't talk about this, but this is something that's very fascinating. Kolob is a star or planet described in Mormon scripture. Its reference to Kolob is a star or a planet. And it's found in the translated Book of Abraham. This was the book. It's a book that's adjacent to the Book of Mormon. It's the Book of Abraham. Basically a scripture that's held by the believers of the Mormon Church. That it's been translated. Actually, they believe that Joseph Smith translated it from an Egyptian papyrus scroll, and it was translated by Joseph Smith, who was the founder of the Mormon Church. According to this work, the Book of Abraham, in this book, Kolob is the heavenly body nearest to the throne of God. And while the Book of Abraham refers to Kolob as a star, it also refers to planets as stars, and therefore some Mormon commentators consider Kolob to be a planet. There is actually a Mormon hymn that is sung in Mormon congregations called If You Could Hie or Go Quickly to Kolob, and it explains a place that sounds similar to the Sumerian Hebrew. Let me read you a few lyrics. I just find this fascinating. This is how these are how the lyrics go. It goes, if you could hie to Kolob in the twinkling of an eye and then continue onward with that same speed to fly, do you think that you could ever through all eternity find out the generation where gods began to be, or see the grand beginning where space did not extend, or view the last creation where gods and matter end? Methinks the spirit whispers, no man has found pure space, nor seen the outside curtains where nothing has a place. Now, there are other passages in the Near East tablets that clearly speak of a planet where enlightened beings come from, and that will be visible again when the gods return. However, now it is said that Nibiru, or Planet X, will be a cosmic wrecking ball, and that its presence in our solar system will trigger a cataclysmic cycle. There are plenty of doomsayers now that claim that the increase of volcanic activity, stronger earthquakes, abnormal weather patterns, magnetic storms, and near-Earth object impacts like the ones in Russia and in Iran a couple days ago are meant, it's part of the evidence that somewhere out in space, Nibiru is coming, along with the promise that the gods are arriving as well. Our sun and our planet are showing evidence of profoundly disturbing trends that are adding to the argument that maybe something out there is disrupting the solar system and is causing this so-called wrecking ball effect on planet Earth. It all seems to be escalating. The mainstream media and mainstream science are continuing to create a blackout on information regarding potentially hazardous asteroids that may be pushed towards this Earth as huge celestial body or other celestial bodies, maybe even a planet or even something else may be coming within Earth's proximity. And this is where it gets scary, because if Planet X is happening, if Planet X is biblical, if Planet X is in the ancient scrolls, if Planet X is, anything like Kolob, like the Mormons believe, then we're doomed, because that planet coming in our direction, well, not necessarily doomed. It's basically a promise that if it does come, God and his son and Messiah and everybody else that works for him are going to come down and clean everything up. And they're going to do so, and it's going to be swift, and it's going to be done in the twinkling of an eye. Going to go to Charles now, who said he's had... Now, Charles, you say you're in California. You say you had a vision, or you went through hypnotic regression, and somehow you remember talking about Planet X or Nibiru?
You're going to love this. I can hit so many topics that we're talking right now, but we'll just deal as a moment with the 10th planet.
Okay.
This was in 1977. I did a hypnotic regression. Only ever time I've ever done this. And this is a friend in Hollywood who's since passed away. And you're laying on the couch, and your eyes are closed. You're fully conscious, but your eyes are closed. And you are seeing whatever it is, like a Cinerama movie. Mm-hmm. Your eyes are closed, but you're seeing whatever it is. So as I'm leaving Earth, I'm leaving the solar system, and as I say, the boss says, you know there's a 10th planet. And I'm thinking, oh? I said, well, I'd like to see it. And he says, okay. So, boom, there is the 10th planet, and it's 2.65 billion miles out, and it's on a different plane than the rest of the planets. The rest are on one plane, and this one's at a 45-degree angle, and it's all multicolored and striped and green. And they don't, and they, for, and I told everybody, write down what I told you in 1977, there's a 10th planet, I don't know where it is. They have located it 4 years ago. They don't know exactly where, but approximately, they don't know it has two moons.
Mm.
And of course, leaving the solar system and then leaving and seeing the galaxy, I said to the boss, I want to see the end of the universe. And I am seeing galaxies shooting past me like rockets, three and four and five at a time. And after 5 minutes, I said, stop. I am exhausted. The universe is never ending.
Remarkable.
And that's where we're at, you know, as we're discovering things. And our spirits go on. And that's where our soul is out there, and we can travel to all kinds of amazing places. And that's what's important to, you know, the soul of us, our consciousness, with the point of our forehead. That's where you can go and see amazing things.
So, Charles, you've seen the 10th planet in hypnotic regression. What are your thoughts on this planet returning and all of what I find is historical evidence to show that we've been awaiting the arrival of this planet, and regardless of whether or not people see Planet X now, it's surely supposed to come into, well, actually close to where we are, bringing with it all sorts of what is known as the wrecking ball effect. How do you feel about that?
Right. Well, I don't know because it's on a whole different plane. So unless as it goes in a circle on its 45-degree plane compared to us, then maybe at some point it will then intercept are some of the other planets and cause a wrecking ball effect. But where it was then, it's on a different plane.
Mm-hmm.
And if it just goes around and then intercepts our plane, that's where this wrecking ball effect could be.
Interesting. Yeah, that was the thing that got me, is that there were so many different references to this in many pantheons and many religions, and you know, the idea of, you know, there's this planet or this, they call it the Olamim. It's the most high heaven of heavens where God dwells. It's like, in fact, in some cases, they say he dwells on a rock in heaven, which sounds to me like either a star or some sort of a planet that perhaps the place we go when we die is, yes, heaven, but it's an area where it's much like Earth. It's like another Earth. It's another place to remain and dwell with God and all of the people who he works with, including messiahs, virgin mothers, and all these other beings that we have in our religious belief systems, which is amazing to me, because it just takes it into a whole new realm of just the secrets of heaven, the secrets of God, and the key to opening the gates of heaven, which is amazing to me. It just fascinated me.
Exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
I experienced before I was born, I was conscious of me.
Yeah.
And there was black. And I said to whatever it was, where am I? And stars appeared. And then it disappeared. And again, I'm in black. And again, stars appeared. And it went away. The next image I saw was me conscious of me in the womb, seeing light coming through my mother's stomach where they put a light on. And I thought, isn't that interesting?
Yes.
Before I'm born, I saw the same thing 15 years ago on PBS. They put a camera in where my mind was, and I looked at that on PBS. I said, there it is.
Well, what about the tunnel of life after death? People say we go down a tunnel, at the end is a bright light. I mean, same thing of the birthing process. We go down the birth canal, and there's a bright light at the end.
Right, that's going to where God is, I guess. I mean, I never got to that point. I was just starting to leave the solar system and stuff, but it just is that there is a great energy, my feeling is, that of the Creator and such, and we go on forever. You know,
this really, Charles, this really opens up some deep-headed discussion, and I'm thanking you for calling my program and even opening it more to the point of mind-boggling. It's just a remarkable call. Thank you so much, Charles, for calling the program.
And hopefully we'll talk again and you get my emails now and then. It's a fabulous show. You're the only one that talks on these subjects, which is so important.
Thank you, sir. You have a great night. Take care. What a remarkable call. What do you think? This is I mean, like I said, up all night reading about it. It's so fascinating that saw Planet X in a new light or Nibiru in a new light. 888-673-3700. That's 888-673-3700. More of this deep unraveling of what is history, ancient history, right here on Ground Zero. We'll be back.
FM News 101 KXL.
News your way with the biggest news team in Oregon right now. FM News 101 KXL.
I'm Clyde Lewis. This is Ground Zero. Having a chat with the people online about the time of Chariots of the Gods. I swear that film came out when I was like, it was like in the 70s, late 70s though. You know, I think, because it was around the time I was fascinated with Planet of the Apes. So, and was a kid, Planet of the Apes, of course, we had the Planet of the Apes cartoon, Planet of the Apes TV show, Planet of the Apes toys, we had dolls and Planet of the Apes, you know, models and you know, resin models we paint, Dr. Zaius and all this stuff. So it was around the time of Planet of the Apes that we remember, that I remember seeing Chariots of the Gods. It was a PTA film. They used to give us like this long list of movies that I guess our parents and teachers would choose, and then we would pay like, I don't know, a lump sum of about $12 or $15, and they'd give us a ticket. And then every Saturday, we would have a film we could go see. I remember the first film was like The Flim Flam Man, and there was Godzilla versus King Kong, and there was, you know, there was a time where we'd go ape, where they would show every single Planet of the Apes in sequence, and they would give us like a lunch of a hot dog, potato chips, and bananas, or banana milkshakes, or banana something. I don't know what it was. But it's like you paid for your popcorn. And then, of course, the Sun films. They were called classic Sun films. It was like In Search of Noah's Ark, In Search of Historic Jesus, In Search of Aliens and UFOs. And then there was, of course, Chariots of the Gods. And Eric Von Daniken, of course, was the guy. And I think, I don't know who, oh, no, that was Orson Welles doing The Man Who Saw Tomorrow. That was a, they had all those shows like Nostradamus and all this stuff. And we paid money. Now they just, you know, they come on the History Channel, you know, over and over again. And of course, that was the exposure to Nibiru. That was the exposure to Planet X and the idea that Planet X was coming, or the Planet X was supposed to be here. And then I remember reading something in the newspaper saying that NASA had found, you know, Planet X, and then they denied that they found Planet X. And now if you look through all the mythological, what they say, cosmic mythologies, some call it cosmic blasphemy. But you look at the Hebrew translations of the Olamim, and the Olamim is a dwelling, higher heavens, heavens of heavens, where God exists. And they're saying, well, throughout every tradition, there's a place where God dwells, heaven. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, as above, so below, actually. That there shall be heaven on earth because there is heaven in heaven, heaven above heaven. Thou art the first, thou art the last. The first and last, Alpha and Omega, the Primumaton, the Primumaton. Thou art the first, thou art the last. That is us, that is God, and we are the body, or part of the body, that is God. Amazing. 888-673-3700. That's 888-673-3700. Up all night studying about Planet X. It does play a part in belief systems, in many religious belief systems. Sumerian texts, ancient writings, and you name it. Tonight, a new way of looking at Planet X, and it's here on Ground Zero. We'll be right back.
KXL.
Spinning complacently in the darkness, covered and blinded by a blanket of little lives, false security has lulled the madness of this world into a slumber. Wake up. an eye is upon you, staring straight down and keenly through, seeing all that you are and everything that you can never be. Yes, an eye is upon you, an eye ready to blink. So face forward, with arms wide open and mind reeling. Your future has arrived. Are you ready to go?
The loudspeaker spoke up and said,
"Wait, Siri."
The loudspeaker spoke up and said,
"Wait, Siri."
The loudspeaker spoke up and said,
"Wait, Siri."
I'm Clyde Lewis, and this is Ground Zero. I don't know if I can emphasize any more to all of you that the studies that I did overnight into the morning, going to bed late, waking up early, coming back and having some excitement about what I'm about to tell you tonight, excitement and fear, being chilled to the bone. Have you ever read like a horror novel? Something in one setting means you're so good. I read Jaws in one setting when it first came out. Couldn't put it down. I wanted to read more. And then I saw the movie. This is kind of like that Jaws moment where you're reading about things and you're thinking to yourself, my gosh, I've never really thought about it like this before. And now I go back and I think I was just scratching the surface. Now I'm getting really deep into some really cool stuff. But the topic is something that most people just poo-poo and say, ah, come on, Clyde. Planet X? You're kidding. I'm not. And neither are the prophets of the Bible. And neither are those who wrote those 300,000 cuneiform texts on the tablets of Sumeria, Mesopotamia. Talking about something called the Olamim. Hebrew translation, people say, oh, it means a tent or a house or a dwelling. More people say, no. When you're talking with God, he doesn't live in a tent. Solomon was not referring to a tent when he was referring to the area where God lives. He was referring to a place in heaven, the heaven of heavens. Place beyond what we even can fathom as a heaven, a planet or a rock in heaven. And I kept on reading and studying and figuring out here, well, what is the meaning of all of it? And sometimes synchronicities happen. Sometimes I get emails where I look at them and I'm going, immediately, I got to talk to this person. Or I got to talk to somebody connected to this person because it once again furthers my interest and my freaking out on this topic. Because, you know, Planet X, Nibiru, we've heard it all before, right? Zechariah Sitchin, Eric von Daniken, Chariots of the Gods. But never we heard it like this before. Never we heard that we can back up everything with scriptures and words and translations and other things where we say within the pantheon, within the cosmic mythology, we know that there is a planet, an area where God dwells, where all of his servants dwell, where the angels, the messiahs, and all of these other gods dwell, Apollo, Osiris, Quetzalcoatl, in a planet beyond the sun, beyond our own fathom of the solar system. Wherever we go, whatever we see, whatever we read, we hear of a planet, Nemesis, Nibiru, the other dwarf planet that's heading our way. And the orbit is like so many thousands of years. Now, those familiar with Zechariah Sitchin will say, I know all about this, Clyde. This is old ground, but no, it seems to be new now for me because of what I've discovered, what I've learned. Received an email today from John DiNardo, who sends me emails all the time. I was unaware, though, that he is the host of a show called the Light of Day Radio Show. And had a man on his show called Tom Loopshoe, who is a noted Ohio outdoorsman, talking about a government cover-up regarding several meteorite strikes in Iran. And, of course, we talked about that last night, but this goes even deeper. There may be more meteor showers coming soon, and the reason why is because something is coming. Once again, the sweeper effect, as I said before, something is coming. And I don't know. It just seems to all fall into place. I don't know if I'm, you know, like I said earlier, I'm a Fortean. I believe in Fortiana. I like reading about Fortiana. And this is certainly right up the alley of Fortean thought. And John DiNardo, my guest tonight, this hour and next hour, if he wants to hang with us. Following his service as a U.S. Marine aircraft electronics technician, John DiNardo earned his bachelor's degree in science education from Keene University, specializing in physics and biology. He was inducted into the Kappa Delta Pi Nationwide Scholastic Honor Society upon graduation. He received state certification to teach all the sciences in the high schools of New Jersey. His early career forged in teaching high school physics, and he taught 12th grade, six classes daily. Moving to greater creative latitude, he reverted to his previous career in electronics, working for the following companies: General Instruments Incorporated, McGraw-Edison, Bendix Avionics, MCI Corporation, Dynalco Corporation, Tektronix Incorporated, Industrial Timer Corporation, Mobile Vision Incorporated, and 20 years with Bell Telephone Laboratories, AT&T and Bell Laboratories, inventing, building, and operationally providing electronic circuits used in developing AT&T's commercial and residential telecommunications products. John DiNardo comes with a pedigree so great and so wonderful, you'd wonder, why would he come on this program to talk about Planet X? Well, there's a lot more to it. There are these forces of energies, electricity and magnetism and the electric universe and all kinds of interesting things that we can elaborate on and speculate on. But I'm not going to do that. I'm going to have John DiNardo do that. John, welcome to Ground Zero.
Hello, Clyde. I'm glad to be with you and your audience.
I'm glad you're on my mailing list. I'm glad that you write me emails. I'm glad that you sent me an email today that just sparked my imagination further into what I was studying the night before. It was such synchronicity that I had to have you on the program.
Well, thanks, Clyde. I would like to start out by reading a landmark article from the New York Times, which I obtained from my county library. This article is dated January 30th, 1983. I have the exact photocopy, not a transcript, and I've posted this article with Marshall Masters' website, too, so
okay.
People can access it, the exact article. On the internet. The title of this article, January 30th, 1983, New York Times, Clues Get Warm in the Search for Planet X, by John Noble Wilford. Quote, something out there beyond the farthest reaches of the known solar system seems to be tugging at Uranus and Neptune. Some gravitational force keeps perturbing the two giant planets, causing irregularities in their orbits. The force suggests a presence far away and unseen, a large object that may be the long-sought Planet X. Well, there's a clue right there. They've been seeking this object for a long time. Continuing, evidence assembled in recent years has led several groups of astronomers to renew the search for the 10th planet. They are devoting more time to visual observation with the 200-inch telescope at Mount Palomar in California. They are tracking two Pioneer spacecraft now approaching the orbit of distant Pluto to see if variations in their trajectories provide clues to the source of this mysterious force. Let me clarify that. What they did was they launched the Pioneer 10 space probe in the direction of where their calculations indicated that this massive body was, which was exerting a gravitational force on the outer planets. And their calculations proved to be correct. When they did launch this space probe near distant Pluto, it took years for the space probe to get out there to the outer bounds of the solar system near where they calculated this planet would be, or this large mass would be. And sure enough, they never did indicate. This tells me that they did indeed have success in a mission in detecting the gravitational pull of this massive object, because their theory was that if they got close, the space probe got close to this object, there would be enough of a gravitational pull from the massive body to divert this space probe, Pioneer 10, off of its trajectory slightly. And I quite sure that it was successful. And the reason is no one ever got a report on the results of that flyby.
I know. I as you say, I have been, I was well aware of the 1980s discovery. I remember using it a long time ago when I first talked about Planet X, and completely interested in what they found. No report of what they found. As we're edging closer to the Mayan calendar's doom date of December 21st, 2012, NASA finally piped up and said, there is no Planet X. There is no planet heading our way to destroy the planet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They wanted to diffuse any fear that may be generated by saying that the Mayan calendar and Nibiru or Planet X have any correlation whatsoever. But then after it all died down, they were back again talking about Planet X and Planet Y and all these other planets that they say they're looking for. And then, of course, they've been talking about the Kepler planets and possible life there. So it's no real secret that there may be other planets out there that could be coming closer, well, moving closer to us. Am I correct?
Here is what they're devious. Well, there certainly are many, many objects out there, yes. And with this massive brown dwarf star coming in, mm-hmm. its gravitational pull is so strong that it's dragging, like a vacuum cleaner, it's dragging many other celestial bodies with it. And the problem is, what makes it so dangerous to planet Earth and all life on Earth is that this brown dwarf star, despite its great mass and its consequently great gravitational pull, it's like a little fly compared to our sun. Our sun has a mass equivalent to nearly a third of a million Earths. Take a third of a million Earths, lump them all together, and you've got the equivalent mass of the sun. So this great fisherman, our sun, is reeling in this smaller fish, Planet X, which is a mere thousand Earth masses.
So
now, that's conservatively speaking, I mean, that's what you call the puniest brown dwarf star by yes. definition, is about a thousand Earth masses, and it could be much larger than that. Now, can you imagine the gravitational pull of a body with a thousand Earth masses as it passes a few million miles past Earth,
well,
on it as it's being reeled in by the great fisherman, our sun?
Well, this is where we get a number of people saying that Planet X, or if it is Nibiru or the famed wing planet, this is where we're hearing from a lot of people who speculate that this planet, celestial body, or whatever you call it, would be the wrecking ball, the cosmic wrecking ball that would bring to us a catastrophic cycle. And many are saying that the catastrophic cycle is beginning now and that Planet X is due soon. But right. who knows, John, we got to take a break, but let's talk more about this. John DiNardo, my guest tonight on Ground Zero, fascinating guest, talking to us about Planet X and a number of things, too, that go right along with it. I was up all night long fascinated by this after we did our show about the rock that apparently hit Iran and the high temperatures and all the other strange apocalyptic things that happened. And now it got me thinking about possibilities of this celestial body that John speaks of that may be heading our way, causing these problems on the planet. 888-673-3700. That's 888-673-3700. More from John DiNardo coming up on Ground Zero. Don't go away.
FM News 101 KXL.
I'm Clyde Lewis. You are listening to Ground Zero. Tonight, John DiNardo with us, an expert on Planet X. And, of course, what prompted me to seek out John was an email he sent to me regarding a guest that appeared on the Light of Day radio show, Tom Lupshu, who warned of a government cover-up regarding a lot of the meteorites falling from the sky. Of course, the one in Argentina and Iran. Of course, years ago, we had the one in Chelyabinsk, and I was very concerned. In fact, during the show last night, someone had brought up the possibility that a lot of what is happening is part of some snooker table type of science where things are bouncing off everything else, hitting in everything else, and we're having some sort of a pool table type effect in space where a large celestial body may be heading our direction. And of course, what went through my mind was Planet X. And as I came home last night, with my mind reeling about the possibility of Planet X, I get an email from John talking about the subject matter of some sort of cover-up, which explains the reason why the fireball that exploded in Iran was not reported in the mainstream news. Are they blacking this out because maybe they want to keep quiet the possibility of something coming close to us, John?
Yes, I believe so. They, of course, the governments have always been secretive when it comes to disasters because they don't want to panic the public. And, of course, all governments being nefarious will want to maintain power over the people.
Mm-hmm.
And when people begin to panic because of natural disasters, they begin to start thinking about protecting themselves, and they lose their obedience and their fear. Obedience to and their fear of the government. And this is what the power elite, the ruling elite, hate. And they are afraid of the people becoming independent and destroying their economic house of cards before they have a chance to descend into their underground cities.
Do you find it synchronistic at all that your guest on your show mentioned the fact that a lot of what's going on, from the anomalies in space to electromagnetic type of storms, may knock out infrastructure, and that today, by some strange coincidence, most of the cell phones went down? We had cell phone outages reported in parts of the United States. In fact, the widespread outage in Kentucky, Tennessee, all on the south, many of the phone cell phones went down. I don't know if you heard about this today, but it did. I thought it was synchronistic.
That is an ominous sign. I'm glad you told me about that.
Yeah.
It's really, you know, there will be more celestial bodies passing Earth. Just visualize this object. And I'm not theorizing. Incidentally, I have not gotten a chance to tell you what some of the greatest scientists and astronomers and astrophysicists have said over the last two centuries. Believe it or not, it's been nearly two centuries since, I would say, since the early 1800s, that astronomers worldwide have noticed perturbations or a plucking of the outer planets, Uranus and Neptune, in their revolutions around the sun. And they knew that there's no way that these planets could be pulled or plucked out of their orbits, sort of like a runner on a racetrack going around the circular track.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, somebody on one of the bystanders grabs him by the arm and pulls him off of his course momentarily. That's sort of what happens to these outer planets. And they knew there must be some massive object exerting a commensurately massive gravitational pull in order to perturb these outer planets off of their orbit
now,
path. So
right.
We know scientifically this thing exists. Astronomers have known for nearly two centuries. Now, the late Dr. Robert S. Harrington, one of the most eminent astronomers in the world at the time of this New York Times article was written, 1983, Dr. Robert S. Harrington is saying that this is object is probably a brown dwarf star. I'll just quote to you from the New York Times that I started reading January 30th. Just suffice it to remember that it's the first month of 1983, and the reason I mention that is because I'm going to read you another article from the last month of 1983.
Why don't
he said they're lying?
Okay, John, why don't you read that article after our break? We got to go to news, and then after the news, we'll be back with you because this is some fascinating stuff, and I want to remind you and remind the listeners today that I got a press release from AT&T saying that the Southeast today experienced a outage of cell phone. Southeast experienced issues. AT&T and several other phone groups were responding to phone outages on cell phones. I've heard that it was a cable cut. There are also bad weather in the area, but still there's the possibility of some magnetic disturbance because we've been having some interesting space weather the past few days. John DiNardo with us on Ground Zero. What is causing the space weather? The strange rocks in Iran? Maybe something's heading our way. Could it be Planet X? Who knows? We'll be back.
More with Clyde Lewis and Ground Zero on FM News 101.
Approaching the sun brings definitive change. It will will never again be the same. Appearing in our skies, it is believed to be the prophecy of extraordinary events. The birth of kings. The death of emperors.
Satellite back to default position and are receiving streaming data.
What are we looking at?
This is an area between the Indian subcontinent and the Tibetan plateau. We're picking up an area of anomalous electromagnetic radiation just south of the plateau.
Mysterious tremors are continuing to rattle nerves around the globe, with Cape Town and Sydney being the most recent cities to experience the shaking. These are just the latest in an increasingly long list of unusual happenings that have been occurring all over the world in the past 24 hours. That are yet to be.
Listening to Ground Zero. There was a call tonight. 888-673-3700. That's 888-673-3700. Okay, so we have a rock hitting Iran before the weekend began. A heat index saying that it felt like 165 degrees in that area of the world. Then we have all the cell phones go down in the southeast today. Saying maybe a cable was cut. There was some bad weather out there, but I don't know if the bad weather would affect cell phones. But electromagnetic pulses and all of these things going with anomalous effects in the sky, whether it be solar flares or even rogue meteors that are heading our way. In fact, according to John DiNardo and a guest that he had on his program, that we're going to be seeing a lot of this in the next couple of months, and the media will definitely not talk about it unless the people demand it. And, you know, and this starts... you know, the mind reeling about things like Planet X. And of course, John, you were going to read us another article that you said was going to further more in this discussion. I'd like for you to do that now. It's an amazing topic, and I'm glad you're here to talk about it, because I am really, like I said, I was fascinated about this possibility. The synchronicity of your guest today talking about the infrastructure perhaps going down with some of these so-called rocks passing over with the magnetic energies that could, you know, take out lights, power, cell phone grid, maybe, who knows. And then the cell phones go down today in the southeast. I thought that was fascinating.
Yes. Before I read these articles that show to indicate that there's a cover-up, and the cover-up existed way back in 1983. That's when the cover-up began. Mm-hmm. Before I read that, I just wanted to comment and say that people may be confused in thinking, well, what is it? Is it a huge object, a brown dwarf star of 1,000 Earth masses in size, in mass, or is it a bunch of meteors and asteroids, or what's going on? So let me clarify this. This object, as it comes in through deep space, now I've done a lot of study. It's been proven. It's been shown by scientists and astronomers. So what I'm doing is just repeating their research that they've done over the centuries. That this object is being drawn in by our sun, and it makes sense because our sun is like a great celestial fisherman. It's one-third of a million Earth masses, and naturally it has a incredible gravitational pull, even upon objects that are beyond our solar system. So it's pulling this brown dwarf star in, and as a brown dwarf star comes in, it itself is passing through many, many thousands of celestial bodies, passing by oceans of celestial bodies, especially as it comes in through the Oort cloud, way far out beyond our solar system's outer bounds. And it grabs these comets gravitationally. like a magnet would, like as if you had a huge, powerful magnet on your tabletop and you had iron filing sprinkled all over the tabletop as you drag that magnet, that powerful magnet across your table, it would pick up iron filings, and there would be a trail of missing iron filings along the path of this incoming object. Mm-hmm. Well, each iron filing is like a comet or an asteroid, and the magnet would be like Planet X itself. So you can imagine all these tiny little celestial iron filings, asteroids, meteors, being dragged in and pulled in along with this massive body. It's like a beehive. Planet X is like a beehive, and the surrounding celestial bodies are like the bee swarm around the massive beehive. As you go farther away from the beehive, the density of the bees becomes less dense. Mm-hmm. As you get closer to the beehive, the density of bees becomes greater. That's logical. That's what you would expect. As this object moves in, we're getting a greater and greater density of comets and asteroids and meteors being pulled in. A greater density is passing by Earth now. And that's why the power elite, NASA, the government, the controllers are very much afraid, because they're setting up the International Space Station. They're trying to figure out ways to divert these asteroids, which is commendable. They want to save planet Earth because they live here too. And so they have many, many clever ways to try to deviate these objects from hitting Earth. And that's what's happening with the International Space Station. As you know, you may not, they try to keep this low key, but the International Space Station has been the object of a great amount of construction, tons and tons, at least 100 tons, I would say, of apparatus and equipment has been rocketed up to the International Space Station over the last several years. And this is not just for repairs. I mean, it's obvious to me, and I'm not even in the know. And so you can imagine what scientists in NASA must realize, that this is a plan to try to divert celestial objects from hitting Earth. But of course, they're not going to tell the people. So anyway, let me just get back to digressing too much.
Okay.
The article in the New York Times, the first month of 1983, they said they heralded in their headlines, and they called it the search for Planet X, and their infrared astronomical satellite was being launched. That was the whole focus of this article. Clues get warm in the search for Planet X, New York Times, was that they were launching the infrared astronomical satellite to detect the invisible infrared light that's being emitted by this object, okay? Mm-hmm. So it was really proud of, this is a proud occasion, the launching of the infrared astronomical satellite. And Dr. Harrington and the other astronomers in this article are saying that, quote, we believe that this is probably a brown dwarf star that accounts for this mysterious pulling force on the outer planets Uranus and Neptune. Okay, remember they said it's a brown dwarf star, and one other key point that most people don't catch it is that they say that this object back in the first month of 1983 was about 5 billion miles beyond Pluto. Now they say, now that's hardly next door, but still within the gravitational influence of our sun. That's a very revealing statement by these scientists, because what they're saying is this object, even though it was at the fringes of our sun's gravitational force field, it's still being pulled in, and the closer it gets, the more powerful is that pulling force, and the greater consequent acceleration of this object as it comes in. Now, what happens in the cover-up is they heralded proudly the search for Planet X in the first month of 1983 in the New York Times. Now, in the last month of 1983, somebody in the NSA, obviously, National Security Agency, said, please, do not, or not, they never used the word please. They said, do not talk about this Planet X, okay? So what happened when they actually discovered it? In the last month of 1983, 11 months later, they had a front page article, which I also photocopied. So now it's not a transcript, but the actual article that I have sitting in front of me, and I have posted it on my Facebook page, too. Mm-hmm. Front page, Washington Post, January 30th, 1983. Title, possibly as large as Jupiter, mystery heavenly body discovered by Thomas O'Toole, Washington Post staff writer. Quote, a heavenly body possibly as large as the giant planet Jupiter and possibly so close to Earth that it would be part of this solar system has been found in the direction of the constellation Orion by an orbiting telescope aboard the U.S. infrared astronomical satellite. Now, get this cover-up. I mean, now they're switching their whole focus, and they're saying, we don't know what this thing is. Before, they were saying, we're looking for Planet X, splattered all over the headlines, proudly looking for this long-sought, 200-year-sought, 200-year search for Planet X.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're saying, oh, quote, in Washington Post, so mysterious is the object that astronomers do not know if it is a planet, a giant comet, a nearby protostar that never got hot enough to become a star, a distant galaxy so young that it is still in the process of forming its first stars, or a galaxy so shrouded in dust that none of the light cast by its stars ever gets through. Somebody with a creative propaganda pen wrote this. From the NSA, obviously. Can you hear? Can you imagine all this nonsense?
Well, and that's the,
we don't know what it is. It could be this.
Right.
It sounds like something out of Star Trek. Somehow.
Well, exactly. All of this information that you're talking about, 1983, all the 1980s, has not made it to the internet or wasn't on the internet, so we can't have this fast access to it. So we forget that all of this information was released. And I knew about this information. This is what I've talked about before. The idea of first telling us, then taking it from us. And then recently I've been doing reports and it's all about the possible alien contact idea and the idea that we've been scouting the heavens. The Catholic Church has Lucifer scouting the heavens. This $100 million was offered up for proof of alien life and alien signal interception. They're giving it to, SETI. In order for them to use their radio telescopes to detect anything, Stephen Hawking says he's behind it 100%, did a double take on me because he said a while ago, he says he didn't know if it's right for us to be signaling aliens or bringing anything towards us. And then, of course, there's these legends that Planet X, and I did the stories, did the reading, that Planet X has been, before it was called Planet X, it was certainly known as the Olamim, or the Tabernacle, the great heavens of heavens, the place where the gods lived, the winged planet, and the idea that these gods would return upon this, what is known as the Olamim, or the Olam. And you can read throughout the Old Testament and beyond, Deuteronomy, you read in Psalms, you read in Kings. All of these scriptures say that God has a place in heaven where he holds counsel with all of these other beings. And I'm reading about Sumerian cosmic mythologies, ancient aliens, all these things that some people would consider cosmic blasphemy. And I'm saying, well, wait a minute. There are also stories of, like, for example, in the book of John, in my father's house, or the Olam, or many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. All of this seems to come together biblically. It comes together on the 300,000 tablets were found in the early 19th century. Everything that Charles Fort has said, Eric von Daniken has said, and Zechariah Sitchin have said seems to be coming to pass. I want some comments on that coming up. John DiNardo, my guest on Ground Zero tonight. Fascinating topic, Planet X, in a way that I haven't really approached it before. And it seems that it's been a part of us for thousands of years, and now we're getting closer to the possibility of it coming, maybe us experiencing this cosmic wrecking ball or catastrophic cycle. We'll be back with more. Keep it here on Ground Zero.
Back to Ground Zero with Clyde Lewis on FM News 101.
Lewis. John DiNardo is my guest tonight on Ground Zero. So glad to have him on board with us. Planet X tonight in a way you've never heard before. In fact, some interesting tidbits that I had stumbled upon overnight while doing some studying. Just really fascinated. I stumbled upon the word Olam and Olamim as the dwelling of the high place of God. that this has been part of the traditions for some time. 300,000 tablets, cuneiform tablets, retrieved saying that there was a high place in the heavens where God resided, that it was a planet or a rock in heaven, interchangeable with the word star or planet or celestial body, that many people know of the Sumerian winged planet where the gods live. In fact, I was even telling you that even the Mormons have a belief in something called Kolob, which is a star or a planet where God lives. And you gave me the name of something that I just was blown away by. And what was that name?
The name of an ancient name of Planet X, you mean?
Yes, yes.
Well, let's see. Gabriel's Fist is one. The Destroyer, I don't recall the one I just gave you.
The one about Kolob.
I mean, earlier on the phone today.
Yeah, not, yeah. Now.
Okay, it was Hercolobus. That's another name. Hercolobus, I believe.
Hercolobus.
You can Google that name.
Okay.
That's just one of many names. In Mark Hazelwood's book, Blindsided, he mentions he found like something like 63 different names for this object because it is so well known throughout ancient history. Why would that be? Why would this object be so well known? Because it's on a cometary orbit. Now, a comet, by definition, is an object, a celestial object that comes in at regular periodic intervals, sort of like a celestial pendulum on your grandfather's clock.
Mm-hmm.
And which is, for example, a comet, what's the famous comet?
Halley's Comet.
Halley's Comet, right. Comes in every 75 years. You can expect it like clockwork.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this comet is a large, very large object, and it comes in on a very long period. 36 and a half centuries. Every 36 and a half centuries, this massive celestial pendulum makes its swing from deep space back into our solar system, loops around our sun, and then it is slingshotted by our sun back out into deep space, where it travels for another 18 and a half centuries one way, 18 and a half centuries back the other way. It's a round trip past, going back out to the distant, our sun's twin sun,
mm-hmm.
which is dead, which is not emitting light, but it's a twin sun. It revolves around that one because that twin sun has a very great gravitational pull also. It's like two tennis players. Our sun is in the near court, and our sun's twin sun, many billions and billions of miles away, dark twin sun, is the tennis player on the far court. And Planet X is like the tennis ball that gets batted back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now the tennis ball is slowly coming back toward the player in the near court. That's our sun. And it takes 36 and a half centuries. If you look back, you can see the time indexing agrees with that 36 and a half century interval.
I just looked up Hercolobus. I just looked it up. And they're saying now that a lot of people say they conflated Hercolobus with Planet X. But Hercolobus is a huge planet. It's a red planet. And they call it the planet that brings the end of the world, Hercolobus. It's a very scary name, I think, Hercolobus, but the idea of Kolob being the planet where God resides in the Mormon faith. There's even a song called If You Could Hide a Kolob, which is a very interesting song about going all the way to the planet where the gods began. And this is exactly the same Sumerian legend and cosmic mythology dealing with Nibiru and the Anunnaki and all of the Elohim and others that would serve the one most high God, the Tetragrammaton, the God there, the unnamed God. So it's interesting. This is a very interesting conversation. John DiNardo with us. Your phone call's coming up. Of course, you may have a lot of questions. Like, I'm still trying to unravel this. This is some very interesting stuff tonight as we talk about Planet X on Ground Zero. Don't go away.
FM News 101 KXL.
Let me be clear. As a citizen and as president, Ground Zero is indeed essential on radio and is essential to who we are.
The loudspeaker spoke up and said,
"Wait, Jimmy."
The loudspeaker spoke up and said,
"Wait, Jimmy."
The loudspeaker spoke up and said,
"Wait, Jimmy."
Give up.
Give up.
Give up.
I'm Clyde Lewis, and this is Ground Zero. I had a number of people on Twitter sending me tweets asking me, they said, you know, in the beginning of the program, first hour, you were saying that Planet X is everywhere. It's in a lot of things. It's in the Bible. It's in ancient writings. It's everywhere, even in a Scooby-Doo cartoon. They said, can you tell us the Scooby-Doo cartoon? I don't know the name of the Scooby-Doo called cartoon. I just know that there was a Scooby-Doo cartoon that mentioned Planet X, Nibiru. And we were actually reviewing it during the break, and so I thought as a special treat tonight, we would share with you the little moment on Scooby-Doo where they talk about Planet X. Here is Scooby-Doo, the gang of the Mystery Machine, talking about Nibiru.
Something's been bugging me about our little underwater escapade.
There's a lot about that adventure I wish we could forget.
Amen to that.
But the weirdest part of all was what the late Abigail Gluck whispered.
Like I'll say, a crazy mummified corpse whispering Nibiru is creepy times 10.
It gets creepier. Mm-hmm. I googled it and found a lot. Namely this. Nibiru is a planet listed in the writings of Zachariah Sitchin, particularly his book The Twelfth Planet. According to Sitchin's interpretation of Babylonian religious texts, a giant planet called Nibiru passes by Earth every 3,600 years and allows its sentient inhabitants to interact with humanity. These beings, which Sitchin identified with the Anunnaki of Sumerian myth, would become humanity's first gods. My favorite internet encyclopedia says there's supposed to be a collision. The Nibiru collision is a disastrous encounter between the Earth and a large planetary object. Believers in this doomsday event usually refer to this object as Planet X, or Nibiru.
The doomsday event?
What are they teaching the kids?
A doomsday event?
888-673-3700. John DiNardo with us tonight on Ground Zero. I just find it funny that they even sneak it into Scooby-Doo cartoons, all the information about Planet X.
Yeah, they have the power. The government, the ruling elite has the power to influence television programming. We all know that with the prior to the attacks on the Twin Towers on September 11, 2001, 6 months before that, on the X-Files, they had a drama which actually dramatized the coming event.
Also, yeah, the event.
Into the World Trade Center. So they, and this was all came from the government, mm-hmm. you know, because for some reason they feel they have to tell us what they're going right. to do, but they do it in a cloaked way.
There was a TV show called The Event where actually these aliens were here on planet Earth. They had a place in Alaska where they were at, and then they escaped, and then their sole purpose was to bring they had a dying planet. They were supposed to bring all of their inhabitants back, but the only way they could was to bring the planet back. And the planet looked a lot like Earth, and there it was in the heavens, a huge planet. It definitely was the tale of Planet X. There was a movie called Melancholia that talks yeah. about the planet and also another Earth. And I think there's another movie called The Tree of Life that kind of talks about the idea of another planet that's coming our way.
So the mainstream media is really talking about this, but they're doing it in a covert way, a very secretive, mysterious way, so that they can have, I guess there's a multiple purpose. One is to satisfy their conscience that they warned us, but you know, to do it in such a way that it doesn't really help us at all. It leads us to destruction through ignorance. And also, their other motive is to mislead. You see, mm-hmm. The concept they promoted in the movies of Crashing and Scooby-Doo and the movie Melancholia, the theme is Planet X crashing into the Earth. Well, that does not happen. What happens is the object is being drawn toward the sun, and it will pass across through the over planet Earth, over planet Earth's orbital path, its orbital ring, as well as the orbital rings of all the other planets, but it will not hit Earth. So that's a misconception, and that's why they use that as disinformation to make it sound so ludicrous.
See, I've always heard that it will collide.
The gravitational force is so powerful that it molests Earth's surface.
Right. I have some phones we want to get to. Let's go to Gilbert first. Gilbert says he's a colleague of yours, and he wants to come on the air. Gilbert, hi. You're on Ground Zero, John DiNardo.
Good evening.
Hi. Go ahead.
Hi, Gilbert.
Hello. Hello, John. And how is things going for your show?
Going really well. Things are going well tonight. What do you have to say to John?
Well, there are different interpretations of the orbital path. The one that John just described was one as a cometary type.
Mm-hmm.
There's some that are coplanar, and then the one that I take as a different approach is that the orbit is actually 90 degrees to the ecliptic plane, and most of the orbital time is spent on the southern side of the ecliptic plane. So it comes up from underneath the ecliptic plane, pierces through the ecliptic plane between Jupiter and the main asteroid belt, about halfway, and then arcs up over the sun and pierces back down through, and then continues back down into deep space.
Well, anything that is, from what I've read, anything that is within 4 million miles, more than 4 million, over 4 million miles, is considered a potentially hazardous celestial body. So anything that gets near to us within our solar system will most definitely have an effect on all of the planets, including our Earth. So even if it doesn't hit, we will be experiencing all kinds of craziness, even if it comes, within 4 million miles, which I think would be, a close shave cosmically.
That's correct. But what will happen, again, I'd be presuming the 90-degree model. What will happen is you've got an iron ball the size of Jupiter, probably about Jupiter's mass. So that's 300 times Earth mass and over 1,000 times Earth size volumetrically. But it's going to have an awful lot of iron in it.
Mm-hmm.
You can check that out via the abundance ratios of the elements of the universe. And because it has so much iron, it has so much mass, it's going to throw one hell of a massive magnetic sphere around itself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Just like the Earth does, but so much bigger. It's going to go out, way out there. And it's turning at its angle of rotation, even at 90, would be cutting across, cross purposes to the rotation of the magnetic influence of the sun. So when you add up the magnetic influence of Wormwood, Planet X, Nibiru, plus the sun, plus the Earth, it's a formula for disaster, because it's like they're all locking swords. And magnetically, that's, that cannot end well. Then you have the gravitational effects and all these discharges and all this garbage that it collects, because it collects a lot of methane ice from the Oort cloud surrounding the sun. The ice junk that's part of our solar system reaches out a light year. The sun's gravitational reach is quite long. And it collects it from the Kuiper belt, and it'll collect some junk occasionally from the asteroid belt, and just wherever its gravitational arms reach out. And it just has this ability to collect so much junk and throw it around.
So once again, we're talking about this snooker sweeper effect that I've spoken of before. And like yesterday, I said that NASA released the data on Chelyabinsk, saying that it was a chip off the old block, saying that whatever it came off of, the Chelyabinsk rock that exploded, whatever it came off of was a huge mother asteroid that had been hit so many times and pounded so many times in space that it just shook off and just hurled through space and somehow wound up over the Ural Mountains. And so, you know, a lot of the time when they're telling us, well, look here at this thing, it's not going to hit us. What they don't tell you is the sweeper effect. They don't tell you about how these rocks and these other heavenly bodies are being pushed or being caught up in some, dislodged. You know, cosmic wind or dislodged. Yeah, that'll hit us. So they can't even keep track of that.
No, there's no way they can keep track of it. What you have is the effect is like having a saw blade that runs opposite to a normal table saw blade, and it's like it cuts up through the ecliptic plane and then cuts back down through on the other side. Comes up on one side of the sun, right ascension 18.
Right.
Arcs over the sun and cuts back down through right ascension 6, and then again back out to space. But it's throwing all this junk around.
Yeah.
And the Bible predicts that on this next trip, one of the major events that will happen will be an incineration event, because it's going to be throwing so much methane ice, slinging so much methane ice, that it incinerates about one-third of the surface of the Earth.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, see, now yeah. You're starting to talk about the level of disaster that this thing can bring home. It doesn't even have to touch you. It's like sitting there with, you know, thousands of yo-yos that are swinging on the end of the string, and it can throw yo-yos at you. And these are big, you know, huge blocks of methane ice that's just picked up from its travels, hemisphere skies.
Let me ask John, do you have about a minute or so? Would you comment on what he said?
I agree with much of what Gilbert says. Some of the details we disagree on, but it's only because some of this information is so difficult to really clarify.
Right.
No one even really knows, but I agree with Gilbert.
Well, fantastic. John DiNardo. Gilbert, thank you so much. Just a remarkable phone call to kick off this hour. I thank you for calling, and I thank you for your knowledge, and it's more to think about as we go really deep into this Planet X subject, more, I guess, deeper than I've ever gotten. I've been enlightened by some of the events that have been happening in space and the possibility of the sweeper effect that's been happening. More rocks to come, more explosions in the sky, more sounds and rumbles. So, Gilbert, thank you for the call.
We haven't seen anything yet.
All right, Gilbert, thank you for the call, and thank you for calling in. We haven't seen anything yet. John DiNardo, my guest. Oh, this is amazing. Some interesting times ahead. Hope you're going to buckle in. Front row seat for what is coming from space. Is it Planet X? Is it... Gosh, I don't know what it is. It's just a remarkable thought, and a frightening one at that. 888-673-3700. That's 888-673-3700. Back with more. Don't go away. You're listening to Ground Zero. We'll be back.
FM News 101 KXL.
Welcome back to Ground Zero. My guest tonight, John DiNardo, taking phone calls at 888-673-3700. That's 888-673-3700. Let's go to Steve in New York. Hi, Steve. You're on Ground Zero with John DiNardo.
Yeah, hi. That was really quick. Hey, I've got several things to say, including a quick joke if you won't hang up on me. It's not no girl, it's your mama. Perturbing the planets, but anyway, that wasn't funny, was it?
I don't know. Go ahead. Get on the show. We only got much time before we go to news, so go ahead.
Okay. The thing is that I don't believe Navarro is the same as Planet X. I think they're two different things. I think Planet X is probably a dwarf star, if it is anything, because there is there's a dwarf star they did find that's like 80 to 90 degrees hot, which would mean that you could have life on it. Okay, they did a show on Star Trek, the Enterprise X, that the first Enterprise that had a planet with no star.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just possible if you had a dwarf star. And I'm not going to argue or agree with everything he says, because I agree with most of what he's saying. It could be true. I believe that archaeology tries to prove the Bible more than it does try to prove anything factual.
Well, that's the thing. I was very surprised, as I said earlier, I was very surprised in what I was studying, as I would agree with you, Steve, that if you look at all of what is known as the cosmic mythology surrounding our gods, no matter who they are, whether it be Apollo or Quetzalcoatl or any of these, they all belong on some planet or some locale that is near the sun, or that is somewhere else in the star systems. And I came across a Hebrew word, olamim, or olam, which some interpret as a tent or a tabernacle or a temple. But as you go further within the Old Testament and further on, you find that it is an area, or it's a high, it's in the most high, the first and the last. And they say that this is where God lives. He lives on a rock in heaven. Or he lives in the heavens most heaven, which is, of course, somewhere out in space in the solar system. And basically I was confounded by this because, of course, I never knew this. And then they don't tell you exactly where in the heavens he lives, but they say it's in a place that, is where he, creates, all of humanity, all of the creatures, everything. And he's constantly creating and building upon the universe. I just found that to be fascinating because of the fact that the old winged planet the Sumerians talked about was the planet of the gods. It was Nibiru, the Anunnaki. They talk about how the Elohim and others, you know, all fit into this type of pantheon, and then stumbled upon Kolob, which, of course, is a planet that Mormons say where God lives, or a star where God lives, according to a book written by Joseph Smith. So it's amazing. And then we hear Herculebus, or which is like Kolob, Herculebus, which is, of course, the planet of doomsday, or the planet of God returning, basically to create the cataclysmic cycle on planet Earth. So it's a real fascinating subject when you go beyond, you know, just what Zachariah Sitchin had said, beyond what Eric Von Daniken had said, and beyond the ancient aliens, theories that, Planet X has played a role in, a lot of the ancient histories and other histories. So, you know, this may be something that we need to kind of open up and pay attention to a little bit more than we do.
Yeah, but additionally, what I called in for and wanted to say was that Planet X could possibly be a spaceship, which is on a fact-finding science mission, and it might come back every few thousand years just to catch up on us and see what's going on or whatever.
Sounds like Arthur Clarke did a book called Rendezvous with Rama. Which is a planet, which is a spaceship that was going, it came over to the area every so many thousands of years, and they did so because they wanted to go to the sun to get more fuel. Amazing story.
Yeah, it may be two different things. You could have a Planet X and a spaceship.
Yeah. Well, Steve,
I think I called it once, once before and said that I could prove that Poseidon existed because his trident could have actually been a directional antenna.
That's it. That's an amazing thought. Hey, Steve, I'm out of time, but I appreciate you calling in tonight. Take care, buddy. Good call from Steve. John DiNardo, my guest tonight on Ground Zero. We're talking about Planet X, going deeper than I think most shows have about Planet X tonight, and talking about all of the mythologies, all of the possibilities, and some of the more contemporary cover-ups and actually blackouts of things falling from space that may have a connection to a celestial body having a pull in our solar system. 888-673-3700. That's 888-673-3700. I'm Clyde Lewis. You're listening to Ground Zero.
With Clyde Lewis and Ground Zero on FM News 101.
Four For years, we've wondered about a mysterious object that orbits our sun every 3,600 years. We know it by many names: Planet X, Nibiru, Destroyer, and Wormwood.
Scientists suggesting the Earth may be on the verge of another mass extinction, similar to the one that killed the dinosaurs. It happened five times in the past 540 million years, but this time around, experts say we may be able to stop it.
In December 1983, scientists at the IRAS Space Observatory made headlines when they announced that they had used an infrared satellite to detect an unknown object. IRAS reported that the object appeared to be moving towards Earth. With the discovery of the unknown object, it seemed conceivable that the search for the elusive Planet X was finally over. But just 4 years later, in 1987, NASA announced that its two Pioneer spacecrafts had failed to find any evidence to support speculation that Planet X is out there. So what had happened to this unknown object the size of Jupiter? Could it have been Planet X, and if so, are NASA hiding it?
Well, so far, if you analyze the last few hundred years of life on the Earth, human activity apparently has wiped out 1.4% of all plant and animal species.
Says Planet X predictions groups at the U.S. Naval Observatory in Washington and at Teledyne Brown Engineering in Huntsville, Alabama, are attempting to solve for the orbit and present location of the planet. Observations of both Uranus and Neptune are now being used, although each has its limitations.
We're going to stay on the air for as long as possible. All we can say is what we've been repeating all morning. Get to any mind of my show.
This isn't the end, son.
I know.
I'm Clyde Lewis. You are listening to Ground Zero. Tonight, John DiNardo is my guest, talking about Planet X. Going deeper than we've ever gone before on this subject. It's up all night reading about it, just fascinated about some of the things I had stumbled upon. And John, of course, coincidentally sending me an email discussing how there's been a blackout in the media regarding some of the anomalies that are happening in the sky. We've been hearing about fireballs, explosions, situation in Iran, hot temperatures, all kinds of strange things. And today, in the southeast of the country, cell phone shutdowns. Many people without cell phone use. Cell phones went down. Of course, the explanation is that some cable was cut or something. But, of course, there was all kinds of storminess moving through, maybe some electric lightning. I never heard of lightning taking out cell phones. But, of course, we have had some sightings of fireballs over Kentucky and other parts of the southeast. So who knows? Anything can possibly be going on. And of course, this may all be connected to Planet X. And that's why I was fascinated by the possibility and led on some other things that I shared with you earlier. Let's go to Shane in North Dakota. You're on with John DiNardo.
Yes. To be quick, you know, you would bring up what you were reading on the other night with these other texts and everything, and I too believe 100% the Bible alludes to a cosmic event, and I think that event is no more of an importance than to enter in the Antichrist, you know, for him to come in and play the hero per se. And I can see this other stuff, you know, occurring just like your guest had said, you know, prior to 9/11 there was on the X-Files, they had a little show where something was similar to what was happening. Mm-hmm. I can see like these cosmic events that are occurring now are the satanic. I'm throwing up my quotation fingers for some stupid reason, but
how can you know, listen? I want to ask you a question though. If this is all satanic, then you know I don't think there's going to be anything left for us to assess whether it's satanic or not, John. Would you say this is some satanic plot?
No, this is actually, I agree with the caller quite a bit.
All right. Do you agree with? What do you agree with the caller? I just want to hear.
I agree with this idea that these natural disasters will usher in the Antichrist.
Wow, okay.
God is the one who, from everything I've studied and prayed about in the Bible, and from all the prophecy, and I really want to get into prophecy because that's so important. It's so convincing. But everything I've studied indicates that God is the one who brings these natural disasters by way of Planet X. The earthquakes, the volcanic eruptions, all are stimulated by Planet X exciting the sun, and Planet X gravitationally and magnetically exciting Earth, causing Earth to be Earth's surface and underlying mantle to be molested and manipulated. Earth will get a facelift. All of this is from God, but what man does to, in his efforts to seize control of the entire world, the one world order, global dictatorship under a one world Antichrist.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with the caller. This is all Satan's way of combating God's attempt to bring people by fear to turn to God in their hearts, in their minds, so that they will live eternally upon the death that all of us await. All of us await death. Upon that death, we will have an eternal life,
right,
if we bring our minds to the great God of love who created us and beckons us to call out to him in our hearts and our minds daily. So it's God that's bringing the devastation through natural disasters. It is Satan who is fighting back and trying to create his own fear to bring people to his side,
right,
by having an Antichrist who is at first to be a peaceful man of bringing the world together against global warfare and on behalf of worldwide harmony and peace. But yet he will become a savage dictator when he has seized control, and Satan himself will indwell this Antichrist at some point.
So, Shane, I guess you can say that what you're kind of pointing out to that is that the Antichrist isn't going to let a good crisis go to waste. Wink, wink.
Sort of, yeah. And like he was saying, you know,
right,
the best way to upend Christianity that everybody understands it to be,
right,
is to have a great big cosmic event and everybody run to church and go, what's going on? And the people in church are going to be like, I don't know what's going on. You know, you got the Pope already starting to, you know, get on board a little bit.
Yeah,
know,
get on board with the global warming people and the climate change people. Just, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, this way we've got a little bit of credibility when it occurs, you know.
It's like that I told you so thing. You know, we got the telescope, we got Lucifer, we got it all. Why didn't you listen to
there
us then? Shane, thank you so much for your call.
All that me.
You hear the man. Thank you so much. Thank you for calling. Let's go to Uncle Doug. Well, we did want to go to Uncle Doug. Uncle Doug, are you there? No, it's Eddie in Wisconsin. I hope Uncle Doug calls back. Eddie in Wisconsin, you're on Ground Zero. Go ahead.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. I just wanted to make a quick comment and then kind of get your comment on this. John, I'd be interested in what you have to say. Basically, I remember a couple of years back that this is kind of pertaining to the actual Anunnaki and Zachariah Sitchin's philosophy. If humans have DNA and they were doing some genetic research and they kept calling what's known as junk DNA junk, which could technically possibly be the genetic splicing of alien DNA. And I'd like to, I guess, get your feedback as to if the Anunnaki from Nibiru actually spliced us and created us to, as Zachariah Sitchin said, mine gold. I guess what might they be able to do to protect us, and what are their feelings towards us as a human race at this point when Nibiru comes flying in?
So, go ahead, John.
I believe that these aliens are actually fallen angels. You see, there's no way that life as we know it could exist on Planet X, which is, according to Dr. Harrington and all the great astronomers and astrophysicists that I quoted in this New York Times article, they all say that it's a brown dwarf star. That's their best estimate. Now, a brown dwarf star, we can associate and get an idea of it by just looking at Jupiter. Jupiter is a massive body. It's about, it's a, equivalent to 318 Earth masses, but it's much less dense than Earth. It's a gaseous, it's a gas giant. That's the what they typically call it. Now, there's no way that anyone could live on the surface of Jupiter. I mean, it's just unbelievable that it could ever happen. So life could not exist on Jupiter. Life could not exist on Jupiter's big brother, another a brown dwarf star, much like Jupiter.
What about
X.
John, what about the winged planet?
From another dimension, without flesh and blood, angels could come in, and they're falling through portals, I believe.
Right.
They come from another dimension.
But I'm confused. What about the idea that the Sumerian story and legend of the winged planet and that the gods lived on that planet? And that is Nibiru, right?
Yes. The winged planet is this, and you'll see evidence of it very often when you look at pictures from the SOHO satellite that takes pictures of the sun. Once in a while, you'll see a comet come in, and it'll have wings that'll look like a flying disc. Now, this flying disc, this winged globe, was witnessed by civilizations in the past when Planet X or Nibiru came in 36 and a half centuries ago, around 1650 BC. Mm-hmm. The Babylonians and the Ninevites, they all recorded this this winged planet, and that's in Zechariah Sitchin's book, as we all know. But the wing effect is caused by this. This object grabs plasma. Plasma is electrified gases. As this object comes in from deep space, it enters Earth's heliosphere, which is a huge spherical barrier composed of gases, hydrogen ions, positively charged. Now, just as when you electrical charge sticks to your hands when you put your hand inside of a box of styrofoam packing peanuts, and they stick so tenaciously you can't get them off your hands. Well, that's a static electric cling, and that static cling is the same thing that occurs with this massive body as it goes through the plasma-drenched heliosphere. It becomes drenched with electrically sticky plasma, and then it discharges. When it gets close to the sun, the positive charge engulfing this planet, this cometary dwarf star, mm-hmm. begins to interact and attract to the sun's negatively electrical space charge, and you have tremendous zapping. So what happens now then is when it gets close to the sun, the plasma begins to spread out laterally, and it looks like wings. So what you're seeing is red glowing plasma, positively charged, as it's being attracted by the sun. And it's kind of complex to explain why it goes out laterally. It's scientifically too complex to talk about now.
Okay.
But you do get lateral wings. And here's the thing. As it gets close to Earth, or one of its massive accompanying bodies gets close to Earth, those lateral plasma wings begin also become accompanied by a vertically downward discharging from the body itself, from the comet itself, to the Earth. So now you have a cross, a glowing red cross in the sky is formed when it gets close enough to Earth, and the Son of God predicted that he would come and his sign, the cross, would appear in the sky when he appears. So he is coming with Planet X, and maybe, you know, it's funny how angels are connected to comets in the Bible.
Well, you can remember through history, John, that Constantine saw a cross in the sky, which prompted him to create the church. He felt that he needed to, bring service back to God, and created Christianity and converted Rome to Christianity because of this symbol in the sky that was a cross, much like what you're talking about. So it's another fascinating chapter in the saga of the winged planet or Planet X or the crossing planet or the cross planet. 888-673-3700. John DiNardo with us tonight on Ground Zero. Fascinating program. We'll be back.
FM News 101 KXL.
More with Clyde Lewis and Ground Zero on FM News 101.
Thank you. Welcome back to Ground Zero. My guest tonight, John DiNardo. Here's a good question. I'm going to get it from Isad in California. What is your question? Go ahead. What's your question, Isad?
Yeah, I just wanted to know that this planet's so big. Why can't we see it now? Is it that it's not close, or is it, you know, amateur astronomers able to see small comets coming to? And I believe in everything that's being said, but okay. Why aren't we able to see it now? That's my question.
Okay, according to the, we've known for over 30 years since 1983 in this New York Times article, clues get warm in the search for Planet X. What they're saying here, and I'm just going to quote to something to get that answers your question. Quote, the infrared astronomical satellite, this is the first month of 1983, the infrared astronomical satellite was boosted into a 560-mile-high polar orbit Tuesday night from Vandenberg Air Force Base, California. It represents an $80 million venture by the United States, Britain, and the Netherlands. In the next 6 or 7 months, the telescope is expected to conduct a wide-ranging survey of nearly all the sky, detecting sources not of ordinary light. That's the answer to your question. Not of ordinary light, but of infrared radiation, which is invisible to the human eye and largely absorbed by the atmosphere. Scientists thus hope that the new telescope will chart thousands of infrared-emitting objects that have gone undetected, stars, interstellar clouds, asteroids, and with any luck, that object that gravitationally pulls at Uranus and Neptune. There's your answer. You can't see it because it only emits invisible infrared light. However, when it gets, because it's engulfed with plasma, this positive electrically charged plasma, as it gets closer to the negative electrically charged space charge around our sun, that plasma then begins to glow. It lights up. It's like a man with a cigar, puffing on a cigar, walking through a dark hallway. Getting closer and closer, you begin to see that little red dot in the sky, that glowing dot, and it gets bigger and bigger as the weeks go by.
Isad, great question. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Stern. Thank you, Clyde. Thank you, Clyde. I love your show.
I love you, man. Thank you for calling in. John, you're the man. I swear, it was great selection tonight. I had a great conversation with you. I'm sure the callers were fascinated by what you had to say. I want to know, where can we hear you and hear more of what you talk about here?
Well, I don't have a radio show. Actually, my webmaster, Sheldon Day, has the Light of Day radio show.
Okay.
But I do have recordings of drama, Planet X dramas that I've done over the years on the shortwave. Let me just give you a website where you can get all the audio archives of all these fascinating music surrounded dramas of Planet X, plus my many radio interviews. And that is the Light of Day radio show. .com. The Light of Day Radio Show.com. Click on the Planet X logo.
John, we're going to be looking up in the skies eventually, seeing that man with the cigar and the little red dot getting closer and closer. We'll be noticing things coming out of the sky. We'll be noticing fireballs and meteors and all kinds of things, reminding us that something out there is coming. And we'll think of what you had to say tonight. Thank you so much for a great Planet X show. Some of the time Planet X shows just get so typical, but tonight I think was a very special night for Planet X and the discussion. Thank you so much for being a part of this program.
Thank you, Clyde.
You have a good night. Take care. John DiNardo, great show. Great callers tonight. You guys are wonderful. I really, really believe, once again, that I have the smartest callers in the whole country, all over the world. And so tomorrow night, join us again for Ground Zero. We'll be here. Hope you check in too. Good night from Ground Zero.
FM News 101 KXL.